This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Ghosts of the Shadow Market, Son of the Dawn, by Cassandra Clare and Sarah Reese Brennan. Read by Riley Dolman.
New York City, 2000. Every world contains other worlds within it. People wander through all the worlds they can find, searching for their homes. Some humans thought their world was the only world there was. Little did they know of other worlds as close to their own as a room, with the demons trying to find a door through to them, and the shadow hunters who barred those doors. Still less did they know of the downworld, the community of magical creatures who shared their world and carved out their own little space therein. Every community needs a heart. There had to be a common area where everyone could gather, to trade for goods and secrets, to find love and riches. There were shadow markets, where downworlders and those with the sight met all over the world. Usually they were held outside. Even magic was a little different in New York. The abandoned theater on Canal Street had stood since the 1920s, silent witness to, but not part of the blaze of activity that was the city. Humans who did not have the sight passed by its terracotta facade in a hurry about their own affairs. If they spared the theater a look, they thought it as dark and still as ever. They could not see the haze of fairy light that turned the gutted amphitheater and bare concrete halls to gold. Brother Zechariah could. He walked, a creature of silence and darkness, through the halls with sunshine yellow tiles, panels of gold and red blazing on the ceiling above him. There were busts grimy with age set in alcoves along the walls, but for tonight, fairies had coaxed flowers and ivy to twine around them. Werewolves had set little twinkling charms depicting the moon and stars in the boarded windows, lending brightness to the decayed red curtains still hanging in the arched frames. There were lamps, with casements that reminded Brother Zechariah of a time long ago, when he and all the world had been different. In one vast echoing theater room there hung a chandelier that had not worked in years, but tonight warlock magic had encompassed each bulb with a different colored flame. Like burning jewels, amethyst and ruby, sapphire and opal, their light created a private world that seemed both new and old, and restored the theater to all its former glory. Some worlds only lasted one night. If the market had the power to lend him warmth and illumination for only a night, Brother Zechariah would have taken it. A persistent fairy woman had tried to sell him a love charm four times. Zechariah wished such a charm would work on him. Creatures as inhuman as he did not sleep, but sometimes he lay down and rested, hoping for something like peace. It never came. He spent his long nights feeling love slip through his fingers, more a memory by now than a feeling. Brother Zechariah did not belong to the downworld. He was a shadow hunter, and not only a shadow hunter, but one of the cloaked and hooded brotherhood dedicated to arcane secrets and the dead, sworn and ruined to silence and withdrawal from any world. Even his own kind often feared the silent brothers, and downworlders usually avoided any shadow hunter. But the downworlders were used to the presence of this particular shadow hunter at markets now. Brother Zechariah had been coming to shadow markets for 100 years, on a long quest that even he had begun to believe would be fruitless, yet he continued searching. Brother Zechariah had little enough, but one thing he did have was time, and he had always tried to be patient. Tonight, though, he had already been disappointed. The warlock Ragnar Fell had no word for him. None of his few other contacts, painstakingly gathered over the decades, had attended this market. He was lingering not because he was enjoying the shadow market, but because he remembered enjoying markets once. They had felt like an escape, but Brother Zechariah hardly remembered the wish to escape from the City of Bones where he belonged. Always in the back of his mind, cold as a tide waiting to wash all other things away, were the voices of his brothers. They were urging him home. Brother Zechariah turned under the glitter of diamond pane windows. He was leaving the market, making his way through the laughing, bargaining crowd, when he heard a woman's voice saying his name. "Tell me again why we want this, Brother Zechariah. The normal Nephilim are bad enough. Angel in the veins, stick up the butts, and I bet with the Silent Brothers it's a whole staff. We definitely can't take him out for karaoke." The woman was speaking in English, but a boy's voice replied to her in Spanish. "Quiet, I see him." It was a pair of vampires, and as he turned, the boy lifted a hand to attract Zachariah's attention. The vampire with his hand up looked 15 years old at most, and the other like a young woman, about 19. But that told Zachariah nothing. Zachariah still looked young, too. It was unusual for a strange downworlder to want his attention. "Brother Zechariah," asked the boy, "I came here to meet you." The woman whistled. "Now I see why we might want him. Hello, Brother Zechariah."
"Did you?" Brother Zechariah asked the boy. He felt what would once have been surprise, and now was at least intrigue. "Can I be of any use to you?"
"I certainly hope so," said the vampire. "I am Raphael Santiago, second in command of the New York clan, and I dislike useless people." The woman waved her hand. "I'm Lily Chen. He's always this way." Brother Zechariah studied the pair with new interest. The woman had hair streaked neon yellow and wore a scarlet capo that suited her, and despite her own remarks, she was smiling at her companion's words. The boy's hair was curly, his face sweet, and his air disdainful. There was a burn scar at the base of his throat where a cross might lie.
"I believe we have a mutual friend," said Brother Zechariah.
"I don't think so," said Raphael Santiago. "I don't have friends." "Oh, well, thank you very much," said the woman at his side. "You, Lily," said Raphael coldly, "are my subordinate." He turned back to Brother Zechariah. "I assume you refer to the warlock Magnus Bane. He is a colleague who always has more dealings with shadow hunters than I approve of."
Zechariah wondered if Lily spoke Mandarin.
The Silent Brothers, speaking mind to mind, had no need for language, but sometimes Zechariah missed his. There had been nights, in the Silent City it was always night, when he could not remember his own name, but he could remember the sound of his mother or his father or his betrothed speaking Mandarin. His betrothed had learned some of the language for him in the time when he had thought he would live to marry her. He would not have minded talking with Lily longer, but he did not particularly like her companion's attitude.
"Since you do not appear to care for shadow hunters, and you have little interest in our mutual connection," Brother Zechariah observed, "why approach me?"
"I wish to talk to a shadow hunter," said Raphael.
"Why not go to your institute?"
Raphael's lips curled back from his fangs in a sneer. Nobody sneered like a vampire, and this vampire was particularly adept. "My institute, as you call it, belongs to people who are, how do I put this tactfully, bigots and murderers." A fairy selling ribbons with glamour twined in them passed by, trailing blue and purple banners.
"The way you put that was not particularly tactful," Brother Zechariah felt bound to point out.
"No," said Raphael thoughtfully, "I am not gifted in that arena. New York has always been a place of heightened downworlder activity. The lights of the city work on people as if we are all werewolves, howling for an electric moon. A warlock tried to destroy the world here once, before my time. The leader of my clan made a disastrous experiment with drugs here against my advice, and made the city her slaughter ground. The werewolves' fatal struggles for leadership are far more frequent in New York than anywhere else. The White Laws of the New York Institute understood us, and we them. The White Laws died defending downworlders from people who now occupy their institute. Of course, the Clade did not consult us when they made the punishment of the Lightwoods. We do not have any dealings with the New York Institute now."
Raphael's voice was uncompromising, and Brother Zechariah thought he should be concerned. He had fought in the uprising when a band of renegade youths rose up against their own leaders and against peace with the downworld. He had been told the story of Valentine's Circle hunting werewolves in New York City, and the White Laws getting in their way, resulting in a tragedy that even that group of angry downworlder-hating youths had not intended. He had not approved of the Lightwoods and Hodge Starkweather being banished to the New York Institute, but the word was that the Lightwoods had settled down with their three children and were truly remorseful for their past actions. The pain and power struggles of the world seemed very far away in the Silent City. It had not occurred to Zechariah that the downworlders would resent the Lightwoods so much they might decline their aid even when Shadowhunter help was truly needed. Perhaps it should have. Downworlders and shadow hunters have a long, complicated history full of pain, and much of the pain has been the fault of the Nephilim, Brother Zachariah admitted. Yet through the ages, they have found a way to work together. I know that when they followed Valentine Morgenstern, the Lightwoods did terrible things. But if they are truly repentant, could you not forgive them?
Being a damned soul, I have no moral objection to the Lightwoods, said Raphael in deeply moralistic tones. I do have strong objections to my head being cut off, given the least excuse the Lightwoods would lay waste to my clan.
The only woman Zachariah had ever loved was a warlock. He had seen her weep over the circle and its effect. Brother Zachariah had no reason to support the Lightwoods, but everyone deserved a second chance if they wanted that chance enough. And one of Robert Lightwood's ancestors had been a woman called Cecily Herondale. Say they would not, suggested Brother Zachariah. Would it not be preferable to re-establish relations with the Institute rather than hope to catch a silent brother at the Shadow Market?
Of course it would, said Raphael. I fully recognize that this is not an ideal situation. This is not the first stratagem I have been forced to employ when I required an audience with shadow hunters. 5 years ago, I had coffee with a visiting Ashdown.
He and his companion shared a shudder of distaste.
I absolutely hate the Ashdowns, remarked Lily. They are so tedious. I believe that if I fed on one of them, I would nod off halfway through.
Raphael gave her a warning look.
Not that I would ever dream of non-consensually drinking the blood of any shadow hunter because it would violate the Accords,
Lily informed Brother Zachariah in a loud voice.
The Accords are deeply important to me.
Raphael shut his eyes, a briefly pained expression crossing his face, but after an instant he opened them and nodded.
So how about it, Brother Lipsmacariah, will you help us out?
Lily asked brightly. A cold weight of disapproval made itself known from his silent brethren, like stones being pressed against his mind. Zachariah was allowed a great deal of latitude for a silent brother, but his frequent visits to the shadow markets and his annual meeting with the lady on Blackfriars Bridge were already testing the limits of what could be allowed. If he began consorting with downworlders on issues that could be handled perfectly well by an institute, Brother Zachariah's privileges were in danger of being suspended. He could not risk missing that meeting. Anything but that. The silent brothers are forbidden to interfere with the affairs of the outside world. Whatever your problem is, said Brother Zachariah, I strongly urge you to consult with your institute.
He bowed his head and began to turn away. My problem is werewolves smuggling Yin Fen into New York, Raphael called after him. Ever heard of Yin Fen?
The bells and songs of the shadow market seemed to go quiet. Brother Zachariah turned sharply back to the two vampires. Raphael Santiago stared at him with glittering eyes, which left Brother Zachariah in no doubt that Raphael knew a good deal about Zachariah's own history.
Ah, said the vampire. I see you have.
Zachariah usually tried to preserve memories of his mortal life, but now he had to make an effort to banish the intruding horror of waking up as a child with all he loved dead and silver fire burning in his veins.
Where did you hear about the Yin Fen?
I don't intend to tell you, said Raphael, nor do I intend to let that stuff be freely available in my city. A large quantity of Yin Fen is on its way to the city on board a ship carrying cargo from Shanghai, Ho Chi Minh, Vienna, and Idris itself. The ship unloads at the New York passenger ship terminal. Will you help me or not?
Raphael had already mentioned the leader of his clan performing disastrous experiments with drugs. Zachariah's guess was that many potential customers among the downworld were talking about the shipment of Yin Fen at the market. The fact a downworlder with conservative views had heard about it was sheer luck.
I will help you, said Brother Zachariah, but we must consult with the New York Institute. If you wish, I can go with you to the Institute and explain matters. The Lightwoods will appreciate the information and you offering it. This is an opportunity to improve relations between the Institute and all the downworlders in New York.
Raphael did not look convinced, but after a moment he nodded.
You will go with me? He asked. You will not fail? They would not listen to a vampire, but I suppose it's possible they will listen to a silent brother.
I will do whatever I can, said Brother Zachariah.
Cunning crept into Raphael's voice.
And if they don't help me, if they or even the clay refuse to believe me, then what will you do?
Then I will still help you,
said Brother Zachariah, ignoring the chill howl of his brethren in his mind and thinking of Tessa's clear eyes.
He dreaded missing a meeting with Tessa. But when he did meet her, he wanted to face her with no stain upon him. He could not let any child suffer what he had suffered, not if he could prevent it. Zachariah was not able to feel all he had felt when he was mortal, but Tessa could still feel. He could not let her be disappointed in him. She was the last star he had to steer by.
"I'll come to the Institute with you," Lily volunteered. "You will do no such thing," snapped Raphael. "It is not safe, remember? The Circle attacked Magnus Bane."
The ice in Raphael's voice could have laid the whole of New York City under frost for a week in midsummer. He eyed Brother Zachariah with disfavor.
"Magnus invented your portals, not that he receives any credit for it from Shadowhunters. He is one of the most powerful warlocks in the world, and so tender-hearted he rushes to the aid of vicious killers. He is the best the Downworld has to offer. If the Circle targeted him, they would cut down any one of us."
"Would have been a damn shame," Lily confirmed. "Magnus throws an amazing rager, too."
"I wouldn't know," said Raphael, casting a look of distaste upon the joyful riot of the market. "I do not enjoy people or gatherings." A werewolf wearing an enchanted papier-mâché full moon head shoved past Raphael, shouting,
"Ooh!"
Raphael turned to look at him, and the werewolf backed away with his hands up, mumbling,
"Sorry, my mistake."
Despite slight fellow feeling with the werewolf, Brother Zachariah unbent a little at this evidence that this vampire was not entirely awful. "I understand that you value Magnus highly. So do I. Once he hated someone very dear to..."
"No, I don't," Raphael interrupted. "And I don't care about your story. Don't tell him I said any of that. I can have my opinions on my colleagues. It does not mean I have personal feelings about them."
"Hey, my man, great to see you,"
said Ragnar Fell, passing by. Raphael paused to fist bump the green warlock before Ragnar disappeared among the stalls and sounds and many-colored lights of the market. Lily and Brother Zachariah regarded him.
"He is another colleague," Raphael protested.
"I like Ragnar," said Brother Zachariah.
"Good for you," snapped Raphael. "Revel in your hobby of liking and trusting everyone. It sounds as appealing to me as sunbathing."
Zachariah felt he had become acquainted with another reason beside Magnus's evil vampire ex, why Magnus always seemed to develop a migraine when people mentioned the vampire clan of New York in his presence. He, Lily, and Raphael strolled through the market.
"Love charm for the handsomest silent brother?" asked the fairy woman for the fifth time, leering through her dandelion clock hair.
Sometimes one could wish the shadow market had not become quite so comfortable with him. He remembered this woman, he thought, dimly, recollecting her herding a golden-haired child. It had been so long ago. He had cared very much at the time. Lily snorted.
"I hardly think Brother Beast with Two Backs Orion needs a love charm."
"Thank you, but no," Brother Zachariah told the fairy woman. "I am very flattered, though Brother Enoch is a fine figure of a man."
"Or perhaps you and the lady would enjoy some phoenix tears for a night of burning pet." She went suddenly silent, and the whole stall scuttled away across the bare concrete floor on little chicken feet. "Oops, never mind, didn't see you there, Raphael."
Raphael's thin eyebrows went up and down like a guillotine.
"More of a buzzkill than the silent brother," murmured Lily. "Oh, the shame."
Raphael looked smug. In Zachariah's head, Brother Enoch was annoyed at being the subject of a joke. The gleam and whirl of the shadow market shone with pale radiance in Brother Zachariah's eyes. He did not like the thought of Yin Fen spreading like wildfire in another city, killing fast as flame, or slowly as choking smoke. If it was coming, he had to stop it. This trip to the market had been useful after all. If he could not feel, he could act. "Perhaps tomorrow night the Lightwoods will earn your trust," said Brother Zachariah as he and the vampire stepped out into the mundane bustle of Canal Street. Raphael said,
"Unlikely."
"I have found it always better to hope than despair," said Brother Zachariah mildly. "I will wait for you outside the Institute." Behind them, enchanted lights shimmered and the sound of fairy music rang through the halls of the theater. A mundane woman turned to face the building. Glittering blue light fell in a strange beam across her unseeing eyes. The two vampires were heading east.
But partway up the street, Raphael turned back to where Brother Zachariah stood. In the night, away from the market lights, the vampire's scar was white and his eyes were black. His eyes saw too much.
Hope is for fools. I will meet you tomorrow night, but remember this, silent brother, he said. Hate like that does not fade. The work of the circle is not done yet. The Morgenstern legacy will claim more victims. I do not intend to be one of them.
Wait, said Brother Zachariah. Do you happen to know why the ship is unloading its cargo at the passenger ship terminal?
Raphael shrugged. I told you the ship was carrying cargo from Idris. I believe some Shadow Hunter brat is on board.
Brother Zachariah walked away from the market alone, thinking of a child on a ship with deadly cargo and the potential of more victims. Isabel Lightwood was not accustomed to feeling nervous about anything, but anyone might be apprehensive when faced with the prospect of a new addition to the family. This was not like before Max was born, when Isabel and Alec had laid bets on whether it would be a boy or a girl, and afterward Mom and Dad trusted them enough to let them take turns holding him, the smallest and tenderest bundle imaginable. A boy older than Isabel was being dumped on their doorstep and was supposed to live with them. Jonathan Whalen, the son of Dad's parabatai, Michael Whalen. Far away in Idris, Michael Whalen had died, and Jonathan needed a home. For herself, Isabel was a little excited. She liked adventure and company. If Jonathan Whalen was as much fun and as good a fighter as Aline Penhallow, who came to visit sometimes with her mother, Isabel would be glad to have him. Except there was not just Isabel to consider. Her parents had been fighting over Jonathan Whalen ever since the news of Michael's death came. Isabel gathered Mom had not liked Michael Whalen. She was not sure Dad had liked him much either. Isabel herself had never met Michael Whalen. She had never even known that Dad had a parabatai. Neither Mom nor Dad ever talked about when they were young, except that Mom had once said they made many mistakes. Isabel sometimes wondered whether they had been mixed up in the same trouble as their tutor, Hodge. Her friend Aline said Hodge was a criminal. Whatever her parents had or had not done, Isabel did not think her mother wanted Jonathan Whalen to be a reminder of her mistakes in her own home. Dad did not seem happy when he talked about his parabatai, but he did seem determined that Jonathan would come to live with them. Jonathan had nowhere else to go, Dad insisted, and he belonged with them. That was what being parabatai meant. Once, when she was eavesdropping on them shouting, Isabel heard Dad say, "I owe Michael this." Mom agreed to let Jonathan come for a trial period, but now that the shouting had died down, she was not really speaking to Dad. Isabel was worried about both her parents, and especially her mom. Isabel also had to consider her brother. Alec did not like new people. Whenever new Shadow Hunters arrived from Idris, Alec would mysteriously slope off. Once, Isabel had found him lurking behind a large vase, claiming he got lost trying to find the training room. Jonathan Whalen was taking a ship to New York. He should be in the Institute by the morning after next. Isabel was in the training room practicing with her whip and pondering the problem of Jonathan Whalen when she heard rushing footsteps and her brother Alec poked his head around the door. His blue eyes were sparkling.
Isabel, he said, come quickly. There's a silent brother meeting with Mom and Dad in the sanctuary and a vampire.
Isabel ran to a room to get out of her gear and into a dress. The silent brothers were fancy company, almost as if the consul had come to visit. By the time she got downstairs, Alec was already in the sanctuary observing the proceedings, and her parents were deep in conversation with the silent brother. Isabel heard her mom say something to the silent brother that sounded like,
"Yogurt? Unbelievable!"
Maybe not yogurt. Maybe it was a different word.
"On the ship with Michael's son," Dad said.
It couldn't be yogurt, unless Jonathan Whalen had a very serious allergy to dairy. The silent brother was a lot less scary than Isabel had been expecting. In fact, from what Isabel could see beneath the hood, he resembled one of the Mundy singers she had seen in posters around the city. From the way Robert was nodding at him and Maris was leaning toward him in her chair, Isabel could see they were getting along. The vampire was not conversing with their parents. He was leaning against one of the walls, arms crossed and glaring at the floor. He did not seem as if he was interested in getting along with anyone. He looked like a kid, hardly older than they were, and he would have been almost as handsome as the silent brother if not for his sour expression. He was wearing a black leather jacket to go with his scowl.
Isabel wished she could see his fangs. "Can I offer you a coffee?" Maris said to the vampire in a cool, stilted tone.
"I do not drink coffee," said the vampire.
"Odd," said Maris. "I heard you had a delightful coffee with Catherine Ashdown." The vampire shrugged. Isabel knew vampires were dead and soulless and all, but she did not see why they had to be so rude. She nudged Alec in the ribs.
"Get a load of the vampire, can you believe that?"
"I know,"
Alec whispered back.
"Isn't he amazing?" "What?"
Isabel said, grabbing Alec's elbow. Alec did not glance at her. He was studying the vampire. Isabel started to get the same uneasy feeling that she got whenever she noticed Alec looking at the same posters of Mundy singers that she did. Alec always got red and angry when she saw him looking. Isabel sometimes thought it would be nice to talk about the singers the way she'd heard Mundy girls doing, but she knew Alec wouldn't want to. Once Mom had asked them what they were looking at, and Alec had looked afraid.
"Don't go near him," Isabel urged. "I think vampires are gross."
Isabel was used to being able to whisper to her brother in a crowd. The vampire turned his head slightly, and Isabel remembered vampires did not have pathetic hearing like mundanes. The vampire could definitely hear her. This nasty realization caused Isabel to relax her hold on Alec. She watched in horror as he pulled away from her and advanced with nervous determination toward the vampire. Not wanting to be left out, Isabel trailed a few steps behind him.
"Hello," said Alec. "It's, very nice to meet you."
The vampire boy gave him a 1,000-yard stare that suggested 1,000 yards was too close up, and the vampire wished he were enjoying blissful solitude in the far reaches of space.
"Hello.
I'm Alexander Lightwood,"
said Alec, grimacing as if the introduction were vital information being tortured out of him. The vampire said,
"I am Raphael."
When he made that face, Isabel did see the fangs. They were not as cool as she had hoped.
"I'm basically 12, continued Alec, who was totally 11. "You don't look a lot older than me, but I know it's different with vampires. I guess you kind of stay the same age you stop at, though, right? Like you're 15, but you've been 15 for 100 years. How long have you been 15?
Raphael said flatly, "I am 63.
"Oh," said Alec. Oh, that's cool."
He advanced several steps toward the vampire. Raphael did not take a step back, but he looked like he wanted to.
"Also," Alec added shyly, "your jacket is cool." "Why are you talking to my children?" Mom asked sharply.
She was already up from her chair opposite the silent brother, and as she spoke, she seized hold of Alec and Isabel. Her fingers pinched. She was holding them so hard, and fear seemed to travel to Isabel through her mother's touch, even though she had not been afraid before. The vampire had not been looking at them as if he thought they would be delicious at all. Maybe that was how he lured you in, though, Isabel considered. Maybe Alec was just ensorcelled by vampire wiles. It would be nice to be able to blame the downworlder for making Isabel worry. The silent brother rose from his chair and glided to join them. Isabel heard the vampire whisper to the silent brother, and she was pretty sure he said, "This is my nightmare." Isabel stuck her tongue out at him. Raphael's lip curled the tiniest fraction farther from his fangs. Alec did glance at Isabel then, to make sure she was not scared. Isabel wasn't scared of much, but Alec was always fussing.
"Raphael came here out of concern for a shadow hunter child," said the silent brother.
"No, I didn't," Raphael sneered. "Better watch your children. I once killed a whole gang of boys not much older than your boy here. Shall I take this as a refusal to help with the shipment? I am deeply shocked."
"Well, we tried. Time to go, Brother Zachariah."
"Wait," said Robert. "Of course we will help. I will meet you at the drop-off point in New Jersey."
Naturally her dad would help, Isabel thought indignantly. This vampire was an idiot. Whatever mistakes they might have made when they were really young, her parents ran this whole institute and had killed lots and lots of evil demons. Anyone sensible would know you could always count on her dad.
"You can consult with us on other Shadowhunter matters at any time," her mom added, but she did not let go of Alec and Isabel until the vampire and Brother Zachariah had left the institute.
Isabel had thought the visit would be exciting, but she had ended up feeling terrible. She wished that Jonathan Whalen was not coming. Guests were terrible, and Isabel never wanted any more.
The plan was to stow away aboard the ship undetected, apprehend the smugglers, and dispose of the Yun Fen. The child would never have to know about any of it. It was almost nice to be in one of the sleek Shadow Hunter boats again. Brother Zechariah had been in the multi-hulled trimarans as a child on the lakes in Idris, and once his Parabatai had stolen one and they'd rowed it down the Thames. Now he, an edgy Robert Lightwood, and two vampires had used one to navigate the black nighttime waters of the Delaware River, coming down from the port of Camden. Lily kept complaining that they were practically in Philadelphia until the boat drew close to the tall cargo ship. Dawn Trader was painted in dark blue letters against its gray side. They waited for the moment. Then Robert threw a grappling hook. Brother Zechariah, Raphael, Lily, and Robert Lightwood made it onto the boat and into a deserted cabin. This journey, short and stealthy though it was, left them with the impression that there was no mundane crew on board at all. Hiding there, they counted the voices of the smugglers and realized there were far more than had been reported.
"Oh no, Brother Hop and the Zechariah," Lily whispered. "I think we're going to have to fight them."
She looked very cheerful about the prospect. As she spoke, she winked and pulled her feathered flapper headband from her yellow-streaked hair.
"It's actually from the 1920s, so I don't want to damage it," she explained, and nodded to Raphael. "I've had it longer than I've had him. He's from the 1950s. Jazz Baby and Greaser Teen take on the world."
Raphael rolled his eyes.
"This is with the nicknames. They're getting worse."
Lily laughed.
"I will not. Once you go Zachariah, you never go back, Ariah."
Raphael and Robert Lightwood both looked appalled. But Zechariah did not mind the nicknames. He did not hear laughter often. What worried him was the child.
"We cannot allow Jonathan to be scared or hurt," he said.
Robert was nodding, and the vampires were looking supremely unconcerned when a boy's voice came from outside the door.
"I'm not frightened of anything," he said.
Jonathan Whalen, Zechariah presumed.
"Then why are you asking about the Lightwoods?" asked a woman's voice. She sounded irritated. "They're taking you in. They won't be unkind to you." "I was only curious," said Jonathan.
He was clearly doing his best to sound airy and aloof, and his best was not bad. His voice almost swaggered. Brother Zechariah thought it would have convinced most people.
"Robert Lightwood's got some influence in the Clave," remarked the woman. "Solid man. I'm sure he's ready to be a father to you."
"I had a father," said Jonathan, cold as the night wind. The woman was silent. Across the cabin, Robert Lightwood's head was bowed.
"But the mother?" said Jonathan, a touch tentative. "What's Mrs. Lightwood like?" "Maris? I barely know her," the woman replied. "She's already got 3 kids. 4's a lot to handle." "I'm not a kid," said Jonathan. "I won't bother her." He paused and observed. "There are a lot of werewolves aboard this ship."
"Ugh, kids raised in Idris are exhausting," said the woman.
"Werewolves are a fact of life, unfortunately. Creatures everywhere. Go to bed, Jonathan."
They listened as another cabin door shut and a lock was shot home.
"Now," said Robert Lightwood, "Vampire starboard, Brother Zechariah and I port. Contain the werewolves by any means necessary, then locate the Yun Fen."
They spilled out onto the deck. It was a rough night, the wind pulling Zechariah's hood down farther, the deck jerking beneath their feet. Zechariah could not open his lips to taste the salt in the air. New York was a glimmer on the horizon, shining like the lights of the Shadow Market in the dark. They could not allow the Yun Fen to hit the city. There were a couple of werewolves on the deck. One was in wolf form, and Zechariah could see the tinge of silver in his fur. The other had lost color in his fingertips. Zechariah wondered if they knew that they were dying. He remembered too vividly how it felt when the Yun Fen was killing him. Sometimes it was good to be without feeling. Sometimes being human hurt too much, and Zechariah could not afford pity now. Brother Zechariah slammed his staff against one of their heads, and when he turned, Robert Lightwood had already dealt with the other. They stood braced, listening to the howl of the wind and the surge of the sea, waiting for the others to come from below decks. Then Zechariah heard the sounds from the other side of the ship.
"Stay where you are," he told Robert. "I will go to the vampires."
Brother Zechariah had to fight his way to them. There were even more werewolves than he had guessed. Across their heads, he could see Raphael and Lily, leaping as if they were insubstantial as shadows, teeth shining in the moonlight. He could see the werewolf's teeth, too.
Zachariah knocked one werewolf over the side of the ship and knocked out another one's teeth in the same swing, then had to dodge a swipe of claws that almost sent Zachariah over himself. There were so many of them. It was with vague surprise that Zachariah thought this could be the end. There should have been something more than surprise to the idea, but all he knew was the hollowness he had felt walking through the market and the sound of his brother's voices, colder than the sea. He did not care about these vampires. He did not care about himself. The roar of a werewolf sounded in his ear, and behind it came the crash of a wave. Brother Zachariah's arms ached from wielding the staff. It should have all ended a long time ago, anyway. He could scarcely remember a reason why he fought. Across the deck, a werewolf, almost fully shifted, whirled a clawed fist directly at Lily's heart. She already had her hands locked around another werewolf's neck. She did not have a chance to defend herself. A door swung open, and the Shadow Hunter woman ran out into the path of the werewolves. She was not ready. A wolf tore her throat out. As Zachariah tried to get to her, a werewolf slammed against his back. The staff fell from his nerveless fingers. A second werewolf piled onto him, claws digging into his shoulders, bearing him down to his knees. Another climbed on, and Zachariah's head slammed onto the wood. The dark rose before him. His brother's voices could be gone, along with the crash of the sea and all the light of the world that no longer touched him. The dead woman's eyes stared into his face, a last empty gleam before the dark consumed all. It seemed as if he were as empty as she. Why had he ever fought? Only he remembered. He would not allow himself to forget.
Tessa, he thought. Will.
Despair was never stronger than the thought of them. He could not betray them by giving up. They are Will and Tessa, and you were Kaji and Ming. You were James Carstairs. You were Jem. Jem drew a dagger from his belt. He fought to his feet, backhanding a werewolf through the open cabin door. He looked to Lily. Raphael was standing in front of her. His arm was flung out to shield her, his blood a macabre scarlet splash across the deck. Human blood was black at night, but vampire blood never looked anything but red. Lily screamed his name. Brother Zachariah needed his staff. It was rolling across the wood of the deck, silver in the moonlight and rattling like bones. Its carving leapt out, shadow dark against the silver, as the staff rolled to the feet of a boy who had just stepped out into the space of chaos and blood. The boy who must be Jonathan Wayland stared around him, at Brother Zachariah, at the wolves, at the woman with her throat ripped out. A werewolf woman was bearing down on him. The boy was too young to even bear warrior's runes. Brother Zachariah knew he was not going to be fast enough. The boy turned his head, hair bright gold in the silver moonshine, and picked up Zachariah's staff. Small and slim, the most fragile of barriers possible against darkness, he charged at the snarling teeth and bared claws. He struck her down. Two more went for the boy, but Zachariah killed one, and the boy spun and struck the other. When he twisted in the air, Zachariah thought not of shadows as he had with the vampires, but of light. When the boy landed on the deck, feet spread wide and the staff twirling between his hands, he was laughing. It was not a child's sweet laugh, but a wild, exuberant sound that rang out stronger in sea or sky or silent voices. He sounded young and defiant and joyful and a little mad. Brother Zachariah had thought earlier in the night that he did not hear laughter often. It had been an achingly long time since he heard a laugh like that. He stabbed another werewolf running for the boy, and another, throwing his body between the boy and the wolves. One got past his guard and swiped at the boy, and Zachariah heard him make a small sound between his locked teeth.
"Are you all right?"
he asked.
"Yes,"
the boy shouted. Brother Zachariah could hear him panting at his back.
"Never fear," said Brother Zachariah. "I am fighting with you."
Zachariah's blood ran colder than the sea, and his heart hammered until he heard Robert Lightwood and Lily coming to their aid. Once the remaining werewolves were subdued, Robert took Jonathan with him to the bridge. Zachariah turned his attention to the vampires. Raphael had taken off his leather jacket. Lily had ripped part of her shirt off and was tying the material around his arm. She was crying.
"Raphael," she said. "Raphael, you shouldn't have done it."
"Sustained a wound that would heal in the night in preference to losing a valuable member of the clan," Raphael asked. "I acted to benefit myself. I generally do."
You'd better, Lily muttered, wiping tears savagely with the back of her hand. What would I do if something happened to you?
Something practical, I hope, said Raphael. Please salvage material from one of the many dead werewolves next time and stop embarrassing the clan in front of the Shadow Hunters.
Lily followed Raphael's line of vision over her shoulder to Brother Zechariah. There was blood smudged and mixed with her blurred eyeliner, but she gave him a cheeky fang smile.
Maybe I wanted to rip my shirt for Brother, let him see my Zechariah.
Raphael lifted his eyes to heaven. Since he was not looking at her, Lily could look at him. She did. Brother Zechariah saw her lift a hand, her fingernails painted red and gold, and almost touch his curly hair. Her hand moved as if she might stroke the shadows over his head, then curled into a fist. She did not permit herself the luxury. Raphael motioned her away and got to his feet.
Let's go find the Yinfen.
It was not difficult to locate. It was in a large box in a cabin below decks. Lily and Brother Zechariah carried the box up between them, Lily clearly ready to make a scene if Raphael tried to help. Even after all these years, seeing the glimmer of Yinfen in the moonlight made Zechariah's stomach lurch and turn, as if the sight pitched him onto a boat on a different sea, one in which he could never keep his balance. Lily moved to tip the box over the side and let it be swallowed by the hungry waters.
No, Lily, said Raphael. I will not have drug-addled mermaids infesting the rivers of my city. What if we end up with glowing silver alligators in the sewers? Nobody will be surprised, but I will know it is your fault, and I will be extremely disappointed in you.
You never let me have any fun, Lily grumbled.
I never let anyone have any fun, said Raphael, and looked smug.
Brother Zechariah stared into the box full of silver powder. It had meant the difference between quick and slow death to him once. He set the fire using a rune known only to the Silent Brothers, a rune meant to burn away harmful magic. Life and death were nothing but ashes in the air.
Thank you for telling me about the Yinfen, he told Raphael.
From my perspective, I took advantage of your weakness over the stuff, said Raphael.
You used to take it to keep yourself alive once, as I understand it.
Didn't work, I see.
Anyway, your emotional state is no concern of mine, and my city is safe. Mission accomplished. He wiped his hands, gleaming with blood and silver over the lapping waves.
Does your leader know anything about this mission?
Zechariah asked Lily. She was watching Raphael.
Of course, she said. My leader told you all about it, didn't he?
Lily, that is stupidity and treason.
Raphael's voice was chill as the sea breeze.
If I was ordered to execute you for it, make no mistake, I would do so. I would not hesitate.
Lily bit her lip and tried to pass off how hurt she clearly was.
Oh, but I have a good feeling about Brother Zechariah. I'm like a bad pony. He won't tell.
Is there a place here for a vampire to be stowed away safely from the sunrise? Raphael asked.
Brother Zechariah had not considered that the protracted fight with the werewolves meant the sun was close to rising. Raphael glanced at him sharply when he did not answer.
Is there only room for one? Lily needs to be secured. I am responsible for her.
Lily turned her face away so Raphael did not see her expression, but Zechariah sighed. He recognized her expression from a time when he had been able to feel that way himself. She looked sick with love. There was room for both vampires in the cargo hold. On the way to examine the hold, Lily almost tripped over the dead Shadow Hunter woman.
Oh, Raphael, she exclaimed brightly. It's Catherine Ashdown.
It was like the faint cold spray of seawater to see how utterly indifferent she was to human life. Brother Zechariah saw her belatedly recall his presence.
Oh no, she added in not terribly convincing tones. What a senseless tragedy.
Go to the hold, Lily, Raphael commanded.
Will you not both go?
Asked Brother Zechariah.
I prefer to wait as long as I can before dawn to test myself, said Raphael.
Lily sighed.
He's Catholic. So very, very Catholic.
Her hand moved restlessly by her side, as if she wanted to reach out and pull Raphael along with her. Instead, she used it to give Zechariah another little wave, the same one she had given when they had first met.
Brother Sixpack Araya, she said. It's been a pleasure.
And for me,
said Brother Zechariah, and listened to her skip lightly down the stairs. She had at least given him the woman's name. Brother Zechariah could take her back to the family in the City of Bones, where she could rest, and he could not.
He knelt down by the dead woman's side and closed her staring eyes.
Awe athkwe wale, Catherine Ashdown,
he murmured. He rose to find Raphael still by his side, though not looking at him or the dead woman. Raphael's eyes rested on the black sea touched with moonlight, the black sky edged with the faintest line of silver.
I am glad to have met you both, Zachariah added.
I can't imagine why, said Raphael. Those names Lily came up with were very bad.
People do not joke with the Silent Brothers often.
The prospect of not being joked around with made Raphael look wistful.
It must be nice to be a Silent Brother.
Aside from the fact that Shadow Hunters are annoying and pathetic.
And I don't know that she was joking. I'd watch yourself next time you're in New York.
Of course she was joking, said Brother Zachariah. She is in love with you.
Raphael's face twisted.
Why do Shadow Hunters always want to talk about feelings? Why can nobody ever be a professional?
For your information, I do not have any interest in romance of any kind, and never will. Now can you drop this revolting subject?
I can, said Brother Zachariah. Perhaps you would like to talk about the gang of boys you claim to have killed.
I have killed many people, said Raphael distantly.
A group of children, said Zachariah. In your city. Did this happen in the 1950s?
Maris Lightwood might have been fooled. Brother Zachariah was familiar with what it looked like when someone blamed and hated themselves for what had happened to those they loved.
There was a vampire hunting children on the streets when my brothers played, Raphael said, his voice still distant. I led my gang to his lair to stop him. None of us survived.
Brother Zachariah tried to be gentle.
When a vampire is newborn, they cannot control themselves.
I was the leader, said Raphael, his steely voice, brooking no argument. I was responsible. Well, we did stop the vampire, and my family lived to grow up.
All but one.
I generally do accomplish what I set my mind on, said Raphael.
That is extremely clear, said Brother Zachariah.
He listened to the sound of the waves hitting the side of the boat, carrying them to the city. On the night of the market, he had been detached from the city and everyone in it, and certainly he had felt nothing for a vampire determined to feel nothing for himself. But then had come a laugh, and the sound had woken things inside him that he had feared dead. Once woken to the world, Zachariah did not want to be blind to any of it.
You saved people today. The Shadow Hunters saved people, even though they did not save you when you were a child trying to fight monsters.
Raphael twitched, as if this implication of why he disliked Shadow Hunters was a fly landing on him.
Few are saved, said Raphael. Nobody is spared.
Somebody tried to save me once, and I will pay him back one day. I don't choose to owe another debt, or for anyone to owe me. We all got what we wanted. The Shadow Hunters and I are done.
There might always be another time for help or cooperation, said Brother Zachariah. The Lightwoods are trying. Consider letting the other downworlders know you survived dealing with them.
Raphael made a noncommittal sound.
There are more kinds of love than stars, said Brother Zachariah. If you do not feel one, there are many others. You know what it is to care for family and friends. What we keep sacred keeps us safe. Consider that by trying to cut yourself off from the possibility of being hurt, you shut the door on love. And live in darkness.
Raphael staggered over the rail and pretended to vomit. Then he straightened up.
Oh, wait, I am a vampire and we don't get seasick, he said. I came over all nauseous for a second.
Can't think why.
I heard Silent Brothers were withdrawn. I was looking forward to withdrawn.
I am not a typical Silent Brother,
observed Brother Zachariah.
Just my luck. I got the touchy-feely Silent Brother. Can I request a different one in the future?
So you think there might be a time when your path crosses with Shadow Hunters again?
Raphael made a disgusted noise and turned away from the sea. His face was pallid as moonlight, ice white as the cheek of a child long dead.
I am going below decks. Unless, of course, you have any other brilliant suggestions.
Brother Zachariah nodded. The shadow of his hood fell across the scar of a cross on the vampire's throat.
Have faith, Raphael. I know you remember how.
With the vampires safely hidden below and Robert Lightwood steering the ship toward Manhattan, Brother Zechariah took on the task of cleaning up the deck, moving the bodies out of sight. He'd call on his brothers to help him attend to them and to the survivors who were currently secured in one of the cabins. Enoch and the others might not approve of his decision to help Raphael, but they would still fulfill their mandate to keep the shadow world hidden and safe. Once Brother Zechariah had finished, all there was to do was to wait for the ship to carry them to the city. Then he would have to return to his own city. He took a seat and waited, enjoying the sensation of the light of a new day on his face. It had been a long time since he felt the light, and longer since he could truly enjoy the simple pleasure of it. He sat near the bridge, where he could see Robert and young Jonathan Wayland in the morning light.
"You're sure you're all right?" Robert said.
"Yes," said Jonathan.
"You don't look much like Michael," Robert added awkwardly.
"No," said Jonathan. "I always wished I did." The boy's thin back was braced to be a disappointment. Robert said,
"I am sure you're a good boy."
Jonathan did not look sure. Robert saved himself from awkwardness by conspicuously examining the controls. The boy left the bridge, graceful despite the lurch of the boat and how weary he must be. Zechariah was startled when young Jonathan advanced across the deck to where Zechariah himself sat. Brother Zechariah pulled his hood close around his face. Some shadow hunters were disquieted by a silent brother who did not appear exactly as the rest did, though the silent brothers looked fearsome enough. He did not want to distress the boy either way. Jonathan carried Brother Zechariah's staff back to him, balanced flat as a tightrope along his palms, and laid the staff with a respectful bow on Zechariah's knees. The boy moved with military discipline, unusual in one so young, even among shadow hunters. Brother Zechariah had not known Michael Wayland, but he guessed he must have been a harsh man.
"Brother Enoch?" the boy guessed.
"No," said Brother Zechariah.
He knew Enoch's memories as his own. Enoch had examined the boy, though his memories were gray with a lack of interest. Brother Zechariah briefly wished he could have been the silent brother at hand for this child.
"No," the boy repeated slowly. "I should have known. You move differently. I just thought it might be, since you gave me the staff."
He bowed his head. It struck Zechariah as a sorry thing, that the child would not have expected even the smallest mercy from a stranger.
"Thank you for letting me use it," Jonathan added.
"I'm glad it was useful," returned Brother Zechariah.
The boy's glance up at his face was shocking, the flare of twin suns in what was still almost night. They were not eyes of a soldier, but a warrior. Brother Zechariah had known both, and he knew the difference. The boy took a step back, nervous and agile, but stopped with his chin high. Apparently he had a question. Zechariah was not expecting the one he asked.
"What do the initials mean, on your staff? Do all silent brothers have them?"
They looked together at the staff. The letters were worn by time in Zechariah's own flesh, but they had been struck deep into the wood in the precise places where Zechariah would put his hands on them when he fought. So in a way, they would always be fighting together. The letters were W and H.
"No," said Brother Zechariah. "I am the only one. I carved them into the staff on my first night in the City of Bones."
"Were they your initials?"
the boy asked, his voice low and a little timid.
"Back when you were a shadow hunter like me?"
Brother Zechariah still considered himself a shadow hunter, but Jonathan clearly did not mean any offense.
"No," said Jem,
because he was always James Carstairs when he spoke of what was dearest to him.
"Not mine. My parabatize."
W and H. William Herondale. Will.
The boy looked struck, yet wary at the same time. There was a certain guardedness about him, as if he was suspicious of whatever Zechariah might say before he even had the chance to say it.
"My father said, a parabatai can be a great weakness."
Jonathan said the word weakness with horror. Zechariah wondered what a man who had drilled a boy to fight like that might have considered weakness. Brother Zechariah did not choose to insult an orphan boy's dead father, so he arranged his thoughts carefully. This boy was so alone. He remembered how precious that new link could be, especially when you had no other. It could be the last bridge that connected you to a lost life. He remembered traveling across the sea, having lost his family, not knowing that he was going to his best friend.
I suppose they can be a weakness, he answered. It depends on who your Parabatai is. I carved his initials here because I always fought best with him.
Jonathan Wayland, the child who fought like a warrior angel, looked intrigued.
I think my father was sorry he had a Parabatai, he said. Now I have to go live with the man my father was sorry about. I don't want to be weak. I don't want to be sorry. I want to be the best.
If you pretend to feel nothing, the pretense may become true, said Jim. That would be a pity.
His Parabatai had tried to feel nothing for a time, except what he had felt for Jim. It had almost destroyed him, and every day Jim pretended to feel something, to be kind, to fix what was broken, to remember names and voices almost forgotten, and hoped that would become truth.
The boy frowned. Why would it be a pity?
We battle hardest when that which is dearer to us than our own lives is at stake, said Jim. A Parabatai is both blade and shield. You belong together and to each other, not because you are the same, but because you are different shapes fit together to be a greater whole, a greater warrior, for a higher purpose. I always believed we were not merely at our best together, but beyond the best either of us could be apart.
A slow smile broke across the boy's face, like sunrise bursting as a bright surprise upon the water.
I'd like that, said Jonathan Wayland, adding quickly, to be a great warrior.
He flung his head back in a sudden hasty assumption of arrogance, as if he and Jim might both have imagined he meant that he would like to belong to someone. This boy, hell-bent on fighting rather than fighting a family, the Lightwoods guarding against a vampire when they could have extended some trust, the vampire holding every friend at bay, all of them had their wounds, but Brother Zachariah could not help resenting them, for even the privilege of feeling hurt. All these people were struggling not to feel, trying to freeze their hearts inside their chests until the cold fractured and broke them, while Jem would have given every cold tomorrow he had for one more day with a warm heart, to love them as he once had. Except Jonathan was a child, still trying to make a distant father proud even when death had made the distance between them impossible. Jem should be kind. Jem thought of the boy's speed, his fearless strike with an unfamiliar weapon on a strange, bloody night.
I'm sure you will be a great warrior, said Jem.
Jonathan Wayland ducked his shaggy golden head to hide the faint color of his cheeks. The boy's forlornness made Jem recall too vividly the night he had carved those initials into his staff. A long, cold night with all the icy strangeness of the Silent Brothers knew in his head. He had not wanted to die, but he would have chosen death rather than the awful severing from love and warmth. If only he could have had a death in Tessa's arms, holding Will's hand. He had been robbed of his death. It seemed impossible to stay anything like human, in among the bones and endless dark. When the alien cacophony of the Silent Brothers threatened to engulf all that he had been, Jem held fast to his lifelines. There had been none stronger than that one, and only one other so strong. His Parabatai's name had been a shout into the abyss, a cry that had always received an answer, even in the Silent City, even with the silent howl insisting that Jem's life was no longer his own, but a shared life. No longer my thoughts, but our thoughts. No longer my will, but our will.
He would not accept that parting. My will.
Those words meant something different to Jem than to anyone else. Meant my defiance against encroaching dark. My rebellion. Mine forever. Jonathan scuffed his shoe against the deck and peered up at Jem, and Jem realized he was trying to see Brother Zachariah's face beneath the hood. Jem drew the hood and the shadows close. Even though he had been rebuffed, Jonathan Wayland offered him a small smile. Jem had not looked for any kindness from this hurt child. It made Brother Zachariah think that Jonathan Wayland might grow up to be more than a great warrior. Maybe Jonathan would have a Parabatai one day, to teach him the kind of man he wanted to be. This is the link stronger than any magic, Jem had told himself that night, knife in hand cutting deep. This is the bond I chose.